think I've told you before that the neighborhood I grew up in was an absolute kid's paradise. Most of the parents that lived in that neighborhood were all about the same age. For most of them, this was their first home that they ever bought, and now they were raising their new families. Everyone knew everyone in the neighborhood, and everyone watched out for each other, and none of the parents would let any of us kids get away with being disrespectful or doing something that was wrong or harmful. You see, if I did something that I wasn't supposed to at Dwayne's house or Larry's or Ray's, my parents would know about it before I ever got home. And they wouldn't have defended me and my right to be an obnoxious brat. That they would have always taken the side of the other parents every time. They were just all great neighbors, and they looked out for each other, and they looked out for all the kids. On my street, in one block, there was probably about 15 boys, all within a year or two of each other. And we were always finding something that we could do together. We'd either be down at Frankowski's field playing baseball or football and eating the green apples that Mr. Frankowski let us pick from his tree. Or in the heat of the summer, we'd be swimming at Rory's house because he was the only one that had a swimming pool, and it sort of became the community pool. Or we'd build forts in the woods and snow forts in the wintertime. I mean, it was a great adventure. I don't ever remember being bored. And amazingly, we didn't have one video game to play. It was great. One of the things that we loved to do right after it got dark, you see, I think the rule was in everyone's house, was when the street lights came on, you had to come home. But we'd all get permission to stay out after it got dark, and we'd play a great game of hide-and-go-seek. We'd do the one potato, two potato thing, the engine, number nine, going down the Chicago line. And when someone was caught and they were it, then we'd yell, ollie, ollie, in free. You remember those kind of carefree days, don't you? They were great. But what I discovered about I discovered something about the difference between being a mediocre, run-of-the-mill hide-and-go-seek player and being a world-class champion player. I discovered, number one, you had to have a good hiding place, and number two, you had to have patience. You really needed both. No matter how good the hiding place was, if you didn't have patience, if you didn't learn to wait to leave the hiding place until you heard ollie, ollie, in free, chances are you'd get caught, and you'd become it, and no one wanted to be it. But on the other hand, if you did have patience, but you didn't have a good hiding place, you'd also be caught, and then you'd become the dreaded it. You had to have both if you wanted to be a world-class champion hide-and-go-seek player. You have to have a good hiding place and patience. When we first started playing, I didn't understand the importance of both of these qualities, and so I was always getting caught, and I was always being it. And finally, when I got tired of being it, I decided I had to improve my selection of hiding places. And I came to some profound conclusions about what makes a good hiding place. Isn't this great, inspiring theology? Aren't you glad you came to church today to learn about hide and go seek? I mean, here's what I learned about some great hiding places. Number one, it had to be your place. If others knew about it, they may take your place before you got there. And for sure, when they were it, they would look in your place. So it had to be your place, and you couldn't tell anyone else about it. Number two, it had to be an unlikely place. It had to be a place where the person that was it wouldn't think to look. Just made sense. My favorite hiding place, that which propelled me to the championship level, was in my dog's doghouse. Now, I got to tell you, it took some work to get into there. I had to get down in the dirt and squirm and squeeze to go through that small opening. And once in there, it wasn't very comfortable, and it stunk. Oh, did it stink? But it was a great hiding place because the one who was it never thought to look there. And my dog would just bark ferociously if anybody came close. But that brings us to the third conclusion I came about hiding places. It's absolutely crucial, it was, that I never forgot the purpose of the hiding place. The purpose was to keep me hidden, to protect me, to keep me from being it.
It wasn't to make me comfortable or warm. If I wanted that, I could have just stayed at my house. It was crucial. I never forgot the purpose of the hiding place. If I forgot the purpose, I would have ended up not choosing a very good place and ended up being it all the time. Well, you know what? Those three conclusions, I think, apply very directly to our lives and this incredible journey we're on to live a life of stout, tough, mountain-moving faith, where we are really being used by God to make a difference. It's not a game we're playing, but the principles still apply, because we have an it. You have an it. I have an it. And the enemy that attacks, his whole purpose is to defeat you and try to destroy you and try to destroy his family and your family and marriages and friendships and every significant relationship you have. And in those moments when the it of our life is mounting his attack, it's crucial that we have a hiding place to run to. And I want to propose to you that God has provided that kind of hiding place for us, if we're willing to listen to him, if we're willing to go there, and if we have the patience to wait to hear him say, "Ollie, ollie, in free." We started looking last week at one of my favorite Old Testament characters, Elijah. His story starts in 1 Kings chapter 17. He was absolutely an unknown character until he's introduced in a big way, and until he comes barging into the king's throne room and makes a bold pronouncement of God's judgment on King Ahab and the nation of Israel. As far as we know, he didn't have the right education, the right credentials, or the right job. He didn't come from the right family or the right part of the country. But he knew God was saying to him, "I want you to be my spokesperson. That's your purpose. That's what will make your life significant. I want you to live your life with this stout, tough, mountain-moving faith that will obey me no matter what I ask of you." First thing we saw last week was the problem. Israel was having a definite problem that caused God to say, "I need someone like Elijah to go and deliver my message to the people." Their problem was idolatry. It started with the king, who was absolutely wicked and evil. He did more, the scripture tells us, he did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than all the kings before him. And then it filtered down into the entire culture. Everyone was caught up in it. Secondly, we saw the person that God sent to address this problem, and that was Elijah. They needed to hear and listen to what God was saying. The wrath and the judgment of God would come if they didn't respond to the message that Elijah was delivering. We saw that Elijah was a man of the word. Man, he knew the word, he believed the word, and he obeyed the word. And because of that, he possessed this stout, tough, mountain-moving faith. And then thirdly, we looked at the principles. We looked at what applies to us in our situation and in our culture. And we saw, if we're allowing anything or anyone to take the rightful place of God in our life, we have the same problem that those Israelites had, idolatry. As much as the guy who bows down to an idol is involved in idolatry, so are we. If we allow anything or someone to take the place of God, to take the top priority in our life. And then we saw, we must become people of the word. If we want to live a life of significance, if we want to have a greater purpose in our life than just trying to make ourselves happy, we need to become a person of the word. Well, Elijah, as we saw last week, went in and delivered a one-sentence message to the king. He gave a very unlikely weather forecast. He said, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew or rain in the next few years except at my word." And I kind of think at first old King Ahab laughed it off and said, "Those weather forecasters, they never get it right. Get that old stinking Deseret out of my sight." And then probably joked about it. Probably told everyone and anyone who would listen about how this hick from Tishba, who came in and arrogantly said he was going to stop it from raining. I'm sure they all had a good laugh at the expense of the old desert rat Elijah. But as the days turned into weeks, and the weeks turned into months, and the months turned into years, and no rain fell, You can bet old Ahab wasn't laughing any longer. As the crops failed and the wells dried up and his depraved wife spewed her obscenities at him, you have to know that Ahab made it his mission to find that screwy little prophet named Elijah who said that there would be no rain except at his word. I'm sure Ahab figured once he found Elijah, it would just be a matter of a little torture to get Elijah to give the word. A good beating had loosened many a tongues, and I'm sure Ahab thought it wouldn't take much to loosen the tongue of the squirrely prophet from Tishba. So Elijah needed a hiding place, a place where he could be protected from Ahab, but also a place where his own needs could be met, because God's judgment affecting the entire nation, that which brought hardship, that was for everyone, including Elijah. So Elijah's hiding place needed to be a place where not only was he hidden and protected from Ahab, but also where his needs could be met. So take your Bibles, turn over to chapter 17, and I want us to read about Elijah's hiding place and see what we can come to expect when God provides for us and we're willing to be obedient to what God is asking us to do. 1 Kings 17, starting to read in verse 1. Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew or rain in the next few years except at my word." Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah, "Leave here, turn eastward, hide in the Kerith ravine east of the Jordan. You will drink from the brook, and I've ordered the ravens to feed you." So he did what the Lord told him to do. He went to the Kerith ravine east of the Jordan and stayed there. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. Now, the first thing I want you to notice about Elijah's hiding place is the characteristics of a God-provided hiding place. That's letter A in your notes, the characteristics. And you know what? They're the same characteristics that I discovered that are necessary for you to be a champion, world-class hide-and-go-seek player. Look at them. Number one, it is a perfect place for you. And it's just for you. And it's provided by God for you. It's not what you might say you need, but it's what God says you need. You see, I don't even know if at first Elijah knew he needed a hiding place. We're not told that Ahab made any threats against him at first. We don't know if Elijah had sort of been basking in his boldness to go into the king and pronounce God's judgment. And maybe if Elijah was, maybe he was even a little bit cocky about it. We don't even know if Elijah knew that he needed a hiding place at first. It's really important to understand this hiding place wasn't his idea, and it wasn't manufactured by him. It was God's idea for him. You see, when we manufacture our own hiding places, that's called escapism. So the person who turns to alcohol when the problems mount, or the guy who turns to pornography when the stress level is high, or when there's problems in the marriage, or when the one seeks divorce rather than doing the hard work of changing and making the marriage work, they're just trying to escape rather than dealing with the issues. And somehow they've convinced themselves that's okay, or that's good, and that's their hiding place. That's not the kind of hiding place that Elijah had. Elijah wasn't trying to escape. And that's not what God will provide for us. There are definite times in life when the enemy is attacking, when the pressure is mounting, when problems are rising, and the stress level is growing, that we need a hiding place. That is not a sign of weakness. But the place we need to go to is where God provides and leads us to, and not just some place that we manufacture because we're trying to escape some difficulty. For Elijah, the place was all God's idea. God's the one who gave very specific direction. Verse 3, "Leave here, turn eastward," not westward, "eastward, and hide in the Kerith ravine east of the Jordan," not west of the Jordan, east. Very specific. God was very specific where Elijah's hiding place was to be. No doubt about it, Elijah could have chosen not to go there. He could have said, "No, I got this. I can handle old Ahab on my own." Or he could say, "I don't think that's a good hiding place. I don't think I don't like this idea of ravens bringing me food. Remember, God, you said in your word that those are unclean birds. He could have chosen not to go to the hiding place that God had chosen and had tailor-made for him. He could have said, I'm going to find my own hiding place. I'm going to handle the problems my own way. But he didn't. He chose to go to the place God was providing for him. It was Elijah's hiding place. It was perfect for him. You see, we need to understand, my hiding place, tailor-made for me by God, perfect for me, probably won't be yours. And yours won't be mine. For Jesus, it was going up into the mountains all by himself to pray. I think that was his hiding place. For Peter, I think it was probably going out fishing. I think for Thomas, when the doubts were overwhelming, I think it was getting alone and just walking the streets of Jerusalem. For you, your hiding place, man, it may be listening to worship music and worshiping God all by yourself, or taking a walk, or working in your garden. It's a place for you, provided by God, perfect for you, where you're able to spend uninterrupted time with God, but also, and this is most important, it's a place where you abandon what you want and are obedient to what God wants. Your hiding place has to be a place of absolute surrender to God and what he wants. And that's the second thing we need to understand. Number two, it's a perfect place for you, but oftentimes it's an unlikely place. It's unlikely because no one who hasn't surrendered their will, their all to Christ, can understand how in surrendering, how in abandoning your own desires and being absolutely obedient, they can't understand how that becomes a hiding place for you. Others who haven't experienced God in the hiding place won't understand the hiding place. And then the third characteristic of a God-provided hiding place is the purpose. And this is the most important thing to remember. You can't ever forget the purpose of the hiding place. It is to keep you hidden from the enemy for a period of time. It is to provide you protection. It is to keep you from being defeated. And listen, it is to prepare you for what is to come. We get into trouble spiritually and emotionally when we forget the purpose of the hiding place. Well, that brings us to letter B in your notes. Inaccurate expectations. We get into trouble spiritually and emotionally. We begin to doubt God and what he's doing if we have inaccurate expectations of what the purpose of the hiding place is. By looking at Elijah, we see it's not necessarily a place of ease. Living in a ravine and your only contact is with someone that's living, or something that is living, was a couple of ravens eating bread and meat that's been dropped by those ravens, having no clue where the bread and the meat has come from. It sounds like roadkill to me. It's not a place of ease for Elijah. He wasn't on a holiday. He wasn't taking a vacation. He wasn't camping out and just roughing it for a couple days. Most believe that he lived there for about a year. Elijah's hiding place was not a place of ease and comfort. Secondly, it was not a place of no emotions. I'm absolutely convinced that Elijah at times was an emotional wreck, even in his hiding place. I'm sure at times he was flat out angry about being there, angry at God, angry at himself, angry at the menu, other times angry and not even knowing why he was angry. I'm convinced that other times he was just sad, didn't like it, depressed. Maybe other times he really was thankful because at least he had something to drink and something to eat, and others didn't have all of that. So the hiding place provided by God is not necessarily a place of no emotion. And we need to understand, even though there are times when we wish we could experience no emotion in our lives, we wish we weren't hurt by others, and we wish we wouldn't get angry, and that's not a realistic expectation. In fact, that's an inaccurate expectation, even for the Christ follower. The hiding place is not necessarily a place of ease or a place of no emotion. And it is also, number three, not a place of escape. The problems didn't go away for Elijah. Ahab didn't stop searching for him. He didn't stop making threats. Elijah would still have to deal with Ahab down the road. The hiding place didn't provide a miraculous deliverance from his difficulty. You see, sometimes we think a hiding place provided for us by God, we're expecting that he's just going to make the battle disappear. Sometimes we expect that the hiding place means the battle's over and we won't have to face that difficulty, or we won't have to deal with that person ever again, or the temptation won't ever come our way. Sometimes we think, well, God will just change my husband or my wife or my kids or my parents or that person who gives me so much difficulty, so then I don't have to deal with the problem. That's an inaccurate expectation of the hiding place. We must never forget the purpose of the hiding place. Okay, that brings us to letter C in your notes. The legitimate expectations. Number one, it's a place where yours and my needs will be met. Elijah's needs at that moment was to be protected from Ahab, to be safe, and to have food and water. Now, you can bet that Elijah had a whole bunch of wants that went unmet. But every need he had was met by God. He was fed every day, and he was protected. And that principle holds true for us. If you and I learn to go to the hiding place provided for us by God, we will discover every true, authentic need we have will be met. Number two, it is a place of assurance. When we have learned to go to the hiding place, it's there that we are given the assurance that God really is in control. Deep within yourself, you will experience the peace and the presence of Christ. You will just know he is in control. You see, God could have provided food for Elijah another way. He could have provided him manna like he did for the Israelites in the wilderness. He could have told Elijah to just drop a line in the brook and catch his dinner every evening. But Elijah really needed to know. He needed the assurance that God really was in control. So every morning and every evening, God had a couple of ravens come and drop off some food for Elijah. I mean, how weird, how crazy is that? But that told Elijah he might not like the circumstances. He might not understand the circumstances. He might have thought it would have been better if God had just done Ahab in. But the fact that those birds showed up every day, twice a day, let Elijah know that God was absolutely in control of what was going on. And when we learn to retreat to the hiding place God has provided, that's one of the things he will assure us of. Somehow, some way, he'll let us know he's got everything under control and he knows what he's doing. We might not understand, and we might not even like. We might not even like what he's doing. We might not like his timetable. We might get frustrated because he isn't working quickly enough for us. But that really doesn't matter. God knows exactly what he's doing, and he's in control. I love how one man who learned this principle and put it into practice responded when he was asked, how did he maintain the right attitude and the right spirit when he was going through so much and people were taking their shots at him and seemed so unfair and so wrong? I love his response. He said, every morning when I wake up, first thing I do is I roll over and I pick up my Bible and I turn to Romans 8:28, and if it's still there, I know it's going to be a good day and I have nothing to worry about. Of course, you know what Romans 8:28 says. It says, and we know in all things God works for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. You see, this guy was someone who had gone to his hiding place and had received the assurance that God was in control. And so he actually lived like he believed it. Too many of us who hang around the church, we say we believe Romans 8:28. Man, we can quote it. But then when it comes to living it out, for all practical purposes, we're living like atheists. We're living like we don't really believe God's in control and that he's going to work for our good. Too many of us live like we're atheists. We don't believe what God's word says. So first, we can legitimately expect that God's perfect hiding place for us will be a place where our needs will be met. It will be a place where we are assured that God is in control. And then number three, it's a place of preparation. It's a place where we are being prepared for the future. This is so important. You see, I'm convinced Elijah would not have had the confidence and faith to tell the widow her flour and oil wouldn't run out, which you read about later in chapter 17, if he had not had this hiding place experience. I'm persuaded that he wouldn't have had the faith and confidence to ask the Lord to raise the widow's son back to life, also in chapter 17, if he hadn't been prepared in the hiding place. And I don't think he would have had, if he hadn't had this hiding place experience and then the experience with the widow, I don't think he would have been so confident when he took on the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah, which we're told about in the 18th chapter. You see, faith is constantly in a building program. What happens today, if you respond in faith, will build your faith for tomorrow. And the faith you need for next week, when that new crisis that you don't even know about yet, you will have it if you've learned to live day by day by faith. It really is a building process. And the Lord knows what you'll be facing, not just today, but next week and next year. And he knows exactly what you'll need. And he's always preparing you and me so that we'll be ready for what is coming next. That's why the hiding place is so crucial. You and I really need to understand this faith principle. How you respond today will either build your faith or demolish your faith for tomorrow. How you respond today in whatever you're going through will either build your faith or demolish your faith for tomorrow. Think about what you're going through today. Think about what went on in your life, your family, and that relationship this past week. Think about the temptations you faced, the failures and frustrations you experienced. Think about the hurt feelings and the words that were directed at you and the accusations made and the names you were called. Now think about how you've been responding. The words you said, the anger you expressed, the accusations you made. Because how you respond today will either build your faith or demolish your faith for tomorrow. And all of this brings us to some crucial questions. Are you really allowing God to build your faith into a stout, tough, mountain-moving faith? Do you have a hiding place that you can retreat to? Do you go to that place that God has designed especially for you where you can spend some uninterrupted time with him? And do you have the patience to wait until you hear God say, ollie, ollie, in free? What kind of expectations do you have for that hiding place? You have some inaccurate ones? Are you expecting it to be a place of ease and no emotions and a place to escape from all the problems so you never have to face them again? Do you expect God to just snap his almighty fingers and sprinkle a little magic dust and make all the problems go away and all the relationships to be perfect? Or are your expectations legitimate? Are they biblical? A place where your needs will be met. A place of assurance that God is in control. A place where you understand you are being prepared for what is to come. And maybe this is the most important thing to understand. The hiding place isn't necessarily a physical place you go to. For Elijah, it was. For Jesus going up into the mountains, I think it was. But the place isn't as important as the person. It's the relationship that you have with Jesus Christ that becomes your hiding place. David, the psalmist, really understood this. He wrote, "You are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with songs of deliverance. You are my hiding place." The hiding place is all about relationship. It's all about this vital, living, dynamic relationship with the Lord. It's not about you doing more. Too many of us have allowed good works to take us away from the hiding place, and we spend no time with him, when that's exactly what we really need. You see, the hiding place is all about maintaining and growing and knowing more intimately Jesus Christ. It's about surrendering. It's about abandoning your plans for His plans, your will for His will, your desire for what He desires. It's allowing Him to be Lord even of those things that make you angry or hurt you or frustrate you. It means following His will for your marriage and your those relationships that are so frustrating and hurtful. It's where you get alone with God and you read His love letter to you over and over again. It goes back to what we talked about last week, being a person of the Word, knowing it, believing it, and obeying it. Just as the ravens brought food for Elijah to eat every day, this book here is meant to be the food that we need to begin to devour. It's the spiritual food you are to feast on. It's not like just reading another book. It really is nourishment for our soul. And then it's spending time with Him. It's resting in Him. It's going to Him when you're afraid or lonely or weak or angry, and you just don't know what to do. It's what the Hebrew preacher described as being a place of rest. It's making sure nothing is hidden from Him. No secret sin in your life. No sinful attitude. It's coming clean before Him, and it's admitting how much you just need Him. It's not running from something. It's running to someone. Escapism is when we run from the problem, but we have nowhere to run. Having a hiding place means we're running to someone. Let me ask you, when problems come like they always do, and challenges are growing, and the enemy is mounting his attack, when the crisis is erupting in your family, when names are called and doors are slammed and the hurt is unbearable and you don't understand any of it, and you're so hurt or so afraid or so angry all at the same time, have you learned to go to that hiding place that God has made for you? Have you learned that He is your hiding place? Do you need to run to Him? Not run away, but run to Him. He is your hiding place. Bow your heads with me.